everybody. We are back. It's been basically over a month, huh, Travis?
Since we recorded, not that you can tell with our weekly releases.
We had a lot happen, folks. So, weddings, actually. Birthday parties, celebrations, random festivals, moving dates. Just overallness, busy. It's been fun. And now we're here and we're back at it, and we're going to hit it hard with the pavement because a certain TV show's second season has concluded a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and originally, you know, I didn't envision this being like a TV show recap type show, because if so, every episode would be something, it would be like something we just watched, but I feel like with this show, we have a lot of strong differing opinions, you and I. And we could probably extrapolate some larger things from it. By the way, since this is an HBO show that we're talking about, and it's Monday, June 9th, some very funny news I read. Warner Brothers Discovery, the company that owns HBO, is splitting.
Yeah.
Again?
Yeah.
So, like, the dirty truth is that cable networks aren't making money anymore, and, you know, the big conglomerates want nothing to do with them anymore. This is why Comcast is doing the same thing. They're spinning their cable networks off to their own company. Warner Brothers is doing that too. They're getting like TNT, TBS, CNN, and like all the Food Network, Discovery Channel, all that crap. That's gonna be like its own company. But then all the good stuff, the HBO, the DC Comics, the Warner Brothers, that's gonna be its own company. And unfortunately, the terrible CEO that is overseeing all this, David Zaslav, wants to be part of the good company, not the bad company, even though the bad company stuff is where he came from. And it just makes me laugh. Like, we always worry about the threat of media monopoly. Like, all these conglomerates are eventually just become one nation under Disney. Because, really, like, that's who would win that war.
Yeah.
But every time, like, there's, like, some giant absurd merger, every few years, it seems like they always find a reason to split, or they'll find another buyer because they can't keep making money for some reason. Disney's the only one that doesn't have that problem, but I think that's because their CEO is like a proper CEO who actually cares about maintaining and growing the company he's in charge of. Like, Bob Iger is like an actual evil person in that respect. So, yeah.
Well, and then speaking of the show we're about to talk about, we should just quickly do our sponsor. It's been a while since we had a sponsor. Mm-hmm. The sponsor today, folks, for this great episode, it actually ties into what we're going to talk about, mushrooms.
Mushrooms.
That's our sponsor, mushrooms. Careful which ones you pick.
Consume responsibly.
Pretty much. Either it's going to be a really good topping for your salad or pizza. It's either going to automatically kill you, or you're going to see a dragon fly above your head. Mm-hmm. Mushrooms. Enjoy them. Don't enjoy them. I like them. Haven't had the fun ones yet. The psychedelics is, I hear they're pretty trippy.
I'm not into like mushrooms as like a salad or a pizza dish. I'm just not.
Really?
Into
not them. Even pizza? I love it on a pizza. No. I love to bake mushrooms on a pizza.
The texture is weird to me.
You know what is also nice though? Stuffed mushrooms. Those are nice. It is a texture thing. I grew into it.
Yeah,
I grew into it. But I like mushrooms. So mushrooms, folks. Just do what the fuck you want with them. All right, let's get into it.
So we're going to be talking about The Last of Us TV show, which has just ended its second season. Tom, you have a very, very strong history with The Last of Us intellectual property, whereas I'm a little new to the game.
A little new. No.
Proverbially and literally.
Basically, the Last of Us TV show is probably one of the greatest things that ever happened to TV so far. It's one of the best things you can watch. It's so well done. And Travis is looking at me because he knows I'm just fucking around right now. I really fucking hate the TV show. That TV show is one of the worst adaptations I have ever seen ever on screen. Like, it makes the first Resident Evil movie look even way better. Yeah, I said it. It's like, it really makes the first two. I'm going to push it farther. It makes the first two Resident Evil movies just...
Somebody's mad.
Yeah. Here's how much I love The Last of Us, as you said, the intellectual property. So it's based off a video game, the TV show.
What is The Last of Us about?
Okay, well, let's break into that.
Yeah.
Before we get into the history, I guess. The Last of Us, the lore, is basically just... it's a post... pandemic world. See, before the game came out, we were all used to the post-apocalypse. Mm-hmm. That was our thing. It was mostly nuclear fallout because of the video games we had, like Metro. And mm-hmm. But then there was obviously then, you know, post-apocalyptic is like zombies. Sometimes you'd have post-apocalypse that involved an invasion aftermath, kind of like a Resistance Fallen Man 1 and 2 and 3.
But it came out in, the first game came out in 2013.
That's what I'm saying. Games before 2013 were post-apocalyptic, where it was nuclear fallout, zombies, or a post-invasion world.
Yeah.
This is the first game that went post-pandemic, and it was amazing. It's an amazing game.
Well, the world-building conceit is that imagine The Walking Dead, but instead of, like, the George Romero rules of its literal dead bodies coming back and we don't know why, the concept is based off of something that actually does occur in nature where there's, like, these mushroom spores that get into insects and take over all the bodily functions of insects to where the insects are practically zombies.
The puppets.
And so someone thought, well, what if you did that but with people? And so it's like, you know, fungus spores, turning people into zombies.
That look like fungus. And you know what's cool, and going more into it, this, like I said, this is a real thing that happens in nature, mostly specifically with insects in the Amazon, where once it's infected, the mushroom takes over the entire ant, for example, and the ant will crawl back to the ant hive, mm-hmm. ant colony, and boom, the whole colony's gone.
Yeah.
Within, like, days.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about this, when they put it for humans, it's mushroom spores. But what's really cool is, like, as we know, mushrooms on average are soft, right? Mm-hmm. These mushrooms are, like, hard, like, steel plates. It's a really cool, like, way the gameplay concept is for not just the environment, but the enemies you face.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole game is it's survival horror. There's a crafting system. There's a, you know, item management, weapon management. You do have to also watch your companions, and your companions help you out. And you are it's linear in the maps. It's not open world. It's all linear, but they are very detailed, where you kind of are exploring too. The same time, these levels, like, to find more stuff or hidden gems or fun little Easter egg stories, and like, it's a well-written world and developed world video game wise for both games.
Yeah, it's and the actual story, which in my opinion, like, you know, okay, so it's just Walking Dead, but they got mushrooms growing out their head. So what's the actual story? The actual story is basically a wolf and cub narrative.
And for Bob's Burgers fans, Hawk and Chick.
Hawk and Chick. It's like a smuggler in the post-apocalypse who's tasked with transporting this young girl across the country, because she's the only one that's immune to the zombie fungus. And as they travel, these two develop a pseudo father-daughter relationship. The central question that is in both the first and second game is basically, how far are you willing to go for someone you love? And the first one, it's more from a framework of guardianship, and then the second game is about vengeance. You know.
Well, I know you're right. Well, the first game, you're right. It is about basically the first game is it asks the whole parent question of, like, would you burn the world for your child?
Yes.
Just to be safe. The second one, that is interesting that you brought it up, because we will get to the second game too as we talk about the first one. The second game, I really thought it was more about the anger one has when they didn't get a chance to forgive and get a last goodbye in. Mm-hmm. That's what I got the second game. I didn't get the second game was the how far would you go for a loved one. I got from the second game, yes, it's about vengeance. It's literally just vengeance. Yes. But I got it from the vengeance was fueled by I didn't get to give forgiveness and also say a last goodbye. That's what I got from that.
Yeah.
But for the first game, it is basically, so the main character is Joel, and you play him for the majority of the game except for one section and the DLC. DLC is worth it, by the way. Joel basically, at the beginning, loses his daughter. He's a divorced man, loses his daughter during the initial outbreak. And then the game jumps 20 years, and he's a smuggler, in that he then gets a job from the Resistance, which is the Fireflies, because the government is just, as we all know, shit. And it's tasked with take transporting this young girl across America, who is possibly the cure for all mankind. Mm-hmm. And her name is Ellie, and she's like, what, 12 or 13 in the game, right? And Joel's like over 40, like mid-40s. Like,
yeah, 12 yeah. to 14, yeah.
You just trek across America. Really, both games are a Western. They are.
Yes.
It's really cool how Westerns, by the way, for a side note real quick, how Westerns have changed so much recently, these past two decades, mm-hmm. of like, it's not just the cowboys, it's really just almost like psychological thrillers.
Yeah, it's the lone man has gun, will travel, runs into vicious gangs and factions. And
exactly, yeah. That's what it, but then it's also too, what does the man give up his soul to defeat that?
Yeah.
That's what the Westerns are really about. It's about the lone gunman sacrificing his soul for the greater good.
Yeah.
That's which is really great. Yeah. This is a really great Western. To give it more perspective, like Travis said, to mirror what it is, you know, the Wolf and Cub, mm-hmm. it's the Logan movie. It's just the same concept. It's just an older guy protecting a younger girl from the evils of the world, like a father would his daughter.
So yeah, and like the first game came out in 2013, and that was amidst, like, Walking Dead was big on TV, zombies.
Oh, Walking Dead was huge.
That was like the big horror trend.
And it was interesting too when you say, okay, zombies was the big horror trend, and at the same time that game came out, you know, the PS3 was on its end of its life cycle. Is that crazy?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's just crazy. I think it was my senior year of high school it came out. That's all it is. It's just as you play the game, brutal combat, stealth mechanics, discovering the world, and you just watch as this two relationship falters or grows. There's death, there's, you know, happiness, there's joy, there's destruction. And then the end of the game, which the end of the first season does, is the same thing.
Yeah.
It comes to that question where he finally gets her to Salt Lake City, the Firefly headquarters, to have the cure. There's just one surgeon who can do it, extrapolate the cordyceps, right?
Yeah, but she would have to die in the process of obtaining the cure. And by this point, Joel has developed way too close of a relationship with Ellie to just let her die like that. So he decides, let the world burn. My pseudo-daughter, the life of my pseudo-daughter is more important.
And you kill almost like 30 dudes in the process. You basically this one man wipes out the entire Firefly faction.
And something I've been doing while watching the show is I've been also listening to the companion podcast that HBO puts out, in which
they have that, that's right.
In which Troy Baker, the original actor for Joel in the video games, talks to the two showrunners of the TV show, one of them being Neil Druckmann, who wrote and directed the original games.
Yeah.
That's kind of a unique factor into itself, like, you know, video games have a very bad history of being adapted into film, and most of the time it's like the people involved in the game are never involved. And if they are involved, it's like, well, the company has someone there to serve as an executive producer doing consulting, whatever. But it's never like the guy who made the original game is now in the writer's room and also directing episodes for, like, a TV show, let alone a movie. So, like, that's, like, a whole unique factor unto itself. But I was listening to that podcast, and something they said is, like, with the ending of the first game, when Joel makes his choice, that they focus group that... He said that when they made the game, they focus group the ending, and it's, like, with people that weren't parents, they asked him, did Joel make the right choice? It was, like, 50-50. But when they focus group people that were parents, it was, like, 100% Joel made the right choice. they totally agreed with the, like the parents agreed with, oh yeah, I would do that for my kid.
I like how you brought that focus group in, because now we're really getting into it. What you and I have talked about, like, mm-hmm. basically for the past, what, 2 years for this show, by the way, season 3 is not even written. And just to bring back to what you said, about TV shows, how long they take. Like, oh my God, this show is HBO's big hit, and season 3 isn't even written out. It's like, when is it going to come out? Like,
It took 2 years for this season to come
out. Yeah, it's like every 2 years is a season.
And granted, we had a big strike that probably gummed up the works.
But the fact that this season 3 isn't even written, mm-hmm. and the thing is, season 3 is just the other half of game 2. Like, you know what to write! But just, sorry, it just makes me think about that. Just a quick little cutaway to that. It just makes me think of, like, damn, this takes forever. Just write the goddamn shit.
I know. But anyway, so...
So going back to it, so you said there's a focus group. And I can speak as a parent. It's funny how they worded it of saying, like, oh, did they make the right decision? The thing is, there's this famous line, and it comes from the movie SWAT with Samuel Jackson, the movie reboot.
Sometimes doing the right thing isn't doing the right thing.
He did the parent choice. That's not the right thing. That's what the thing about the decision he make is this. And yes, I can speak as a parent. Would I defend my kids and, you know, let everyone else die? Of course.
Yeah.
That doesn't make me a good guy.
It's like, I don't know why I'm thinking of this. It reminds me of like the famous question Michael Dukakis got when he was debating George H.W. in like, I think it was 1988. And this debate moderator asked this obscene question. He's like, if your wife and daughter were raped and murdered by somebody, would you still be opposed to the death penalty? You know, of course I would want that man dead, but I'm also not the judge and jury.
The game itself that I think people maybe don't like to recognize because they got so invested in the game. Because the first game is like, what, 50 hours? It's a long game. The first game. Second game is long as hell.
Yeah.
Jesus, it's like almost 80 hours it feels like. But the first game is, it's all the whole part of the first game was you were playing the bad guy the whole time. Because Joel lost his daughter in a horrific way, and it wasn't a zombie that killed her, it was the government that killed her. Mm-hmm. Really, it was. And he exacted vengeance by saying, no, fuck this, I want my chance at being a dad again, everyone could go to hell. But the thing is, there's a big difference, as we know, when it comes, for example, to, as we know in comic books, there's a difference between the good guy and the bad guy. The good guy says, something horrible happened to me, I gotta make sure it doesn't happen to anyone else. The bad guy says, something horrible happened to me, fuck everyone. And that's why Joel's the bad guy.
That's why thinking.
Thing is, when you have parents do that, every parent's gonna say yes because that's a parent's job. It's like the movie Prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who wouldn't torture someone who has autism or Down syndrome to get their daughter back? Anyone would. Doesn't mean you're a good guy, it just means you're a parent. And being a parent doesn't mean you're a good person.
I you know what, you didn't put it to me that way before, the how the good guy would react versus a bad guy in terms of when the world does them wrong. I thought that was very interesting, Tom, and I didn't consider that. I mean, I have a bunch of justifications for why it was okay for Joel to do what he did, but you know what? Yeah.
You're right, because one, how can you trust the government with the cure, because that's the Fireflies. The Fireflies is the new government.
And the government is the one that actually killed his daughter, so
yeah, no,
why would you trust them?
And that's the thing. That's the beauty of the first game. Mm-hmm. You're just playing the bad guy. It's like Spec Ops.
Yeah.
That's it. That's why the game worked, and I think so many people got invested in such an amazing game, like you said. The game's amazing.
Yeah.
You get invested, you forget.
They just bought Joel's rationale hook, line, and sinker. And
that should tell you, folks. But Helen, you're right. That should tell you folks how great these two games are, that you buy everything that the main characters are doing.
Yeah.
And that to me is just good writing. It's the equivalent of like, okay, I guess I'm putting another dollar in the jar. It's like Sons of Anarchy. It is. You root for Jax the whole time.
Yeah.
And look what he does.
Mm-hmm.
But you're rooting for Jax for 7 seasons straight, and look what he does. That's called good writing. That's why The Sopranos was such a big show. Mm-hmm. That's why the Shield, Breaking Bad. That's why all those anti-hero and the anti-protagonist shows are the greatest shows right now.
We all love when a story can make us root for someone who makes the quote-unquote wrong decisions.
I've heard people say, like, you know what? I agree with the Joker in Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight. It's like, yeah, that's called good writing.
Mm.
So, yeah, no, any parent would do what Joel did. He destroyed the entire world's chance at getting back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And he justly did it so, and it makes him the bad guy. And that's why that first game, everyone, is amazing. By the way, these games are PlayStation exclusives.
They keep re-releasing them. So if you have like,
isn't that funny that it's had like what, I think 4 remasters and releases.
So this is where I come in. So like the show comes out, and yeah, they got the original writer of the game along with Craig Mazin, who made Chernobyl. Which, if you have not seen Chernobyl, it's the best miniseries I've ever seen.
We're gonna do an episode on Chernobyl soon, folks. Trust me.
I need to do a Chernobyl rewatch. That it's just five episodes. It's a 5 parts, short and sweet.
It's not sweet.
Not sweet, but you can watch it on a weekend. It'll be a hell of a weekend.
You want to know what a human looks like in a microwave? Watch Chernobyl. Fuck.
Yeah, so they made the show, and I had never played the game before. Ever played the game before, because I had like a PlayStation 2 when I was a kid, but I didn't upgrade. The upgrade was the Xbox 360, so obviously I couldn't play Last of Us. But then this HBO show comes out. I didn't like watch it like right away. I was kind of curious. I remember you were talking shit about it, but then all my film school friends, including those who had played the game, were like, "Dude, that show is so freaking good! Oh, I love it!" And so I thought, "All right, I'll check it out." And I'm gonna tell you what, I really liked that first season. I think I still do like that first season. And then, my wife so kindly for Christmas got me a PS5.
Oh.
And one of the first games I got was The Last of Us Part 1, which is technically, and I do mean technically, a remake of the first game in that they just redid the graphics from the ground up, but they still kept like the same acting. They still kept like the same audio and motion capture files, it seems. It's like literally the same exact game, but the graphics are fully upgraded.
Well, the PS4 was a remaster. The one you have is actually a remake, because when you I know you never played the PS3 version or the PS4 version. Mm-hmm. The way you upgrade your weapons, completely different from what the PS5 version is. So it's actually a remake.
How is it different? I'm curious.
You actually watch him putting the gun like
parts. Oh, yeah.
You watch him putting the gun parts on. You watch him strip it down, field strip it, and put it together.
Yes.
So in the PS5 version of the game, it is a remake because they change some key stuff.
Yeah.
Compared to in the for example, the PlayStation 3 and the PS4, because I played both of them, it's a shoulder overview with the shoulder blocking you doing your gun smithing. In the PS5 version, you watch Joel
break
the gun down, pull it apart, field strip it, and put it back together.
Is that how it was in part 2 from the get-go?
From the get-go for part 2, the PS4, which it was on the PS4, was a complete immersive gunsmithing component. And that's why for the PS5 they put that in there.
Okay, yeah, because I did read that one of the reasons for quote-unquote remaking part 1 was to make it closer in line with part 2 in terms of how it looks and the gameplay is.
Upgrading your weapons is the best part of both games.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
It's so fun, and it requires a lot of tactical decision making.
Oh, you have to really decide your resources. Like, fuck, do I really need space for an extra bullet? Do I really want the recoil to not suck?
And it's like, and you can't do it anytime. You can only do it if you come across like a workbench on your journey. Right. So it's like, this is your one opportunity. Do it here. Because once you move on, you can't.
You can't backtrack. Actually can't backtrack.
No.
And this sucks is when you find a bunch of components and scrap parts. You're like, fuck.
You're like, when is the next workbench? When is the next workbench? I need to upgrade my gun. I played the first game after watching the show. I was really stunned. I mean, I heard a lot of people saying like the first game, the first season of The Last of Us is shockingly faithful to the game. And when playing the game, I was pretty stunned. I was like, I remember this from the show. I remember this from the show. I remember that from the show. Wow. I'm quite stunned. And then I watched the show again. Because I was like, okay, now that I've played the game from start to finish, I'll see the show, and then, you know, and then I could really see like what got changed from game to show. And I still liked it. And Tom does not understand that.
Okay, I'll say this. So this is how much to show. I'm probably on my own island that I'm the only one who hates the show as a sense of the adaption from the games. I love the game so much.
Maybe not. I've seen a lot more detraction.
Well, no.
For season one?
Here's the thing. Yeah. We'll get to season two, and I think all those people, for the main reason why season two has hate, can go fuck themselves, because that's bullshit.
Oh, because they hated the second game anyway.
Yeah, no. And there's a reason why. I think I'm one of the very few people who love the second game for what it specifically did. And we'll get to that.
You love the second game. Yeah.
But the thing is, people hate the second game and season two, That is very small-minded.
Mm-hmm.
It is. So let's just talk about the first season. By the way, folks, this is going to be an episode. Get ready. So this is how much I love the game. Mm-hmm. In high school when it came out my spring year, spring semester. By the way, we're getting ready for a big play, Travis and I, and we still got to do our like recap of high school.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, so when it came out, I didn't have any system, actually. Before I entered middle school, I sold my PS2 and GameCube for some quick cash. I literally just got rid of all my games and stuck to just reading books and watching TV. Mm. I saw the trailer during some, like, I think it was E3. I saw the trailer for this game coming up.
Remember E3?
When it meant something? Yeah.
When it existed?
And meant something? Because, no, toward the end of E3's life, it sucked dick.
Which is why it doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly. But when E3 did the original trailer for the... I know, right?
It'd be like if San Diego Comic-Con stopped.
Because it sucked dick. Not because of, like, oh, the funding was hard. Some natural disaster happened where we missed out on this year and then it lost traction. No. Think of Comic-Con just actually started to suck so hard that it stopped.
Yes.
That's what happened to E3. But when E3 showed the trailer for The Last of Us, a little teaser, I was like this. I want it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know more about this. Second trailer, I needed more about this. One of the gameplay demos, which shows you how the HUD, like your health bar and everything, look different. I'm like, I'm really into this. I want to know. And the what they showed for the main demo release was the hotel section.
Ooh.
Oh my God, and it hit hard.
Ooh,
section. the hotel section is one of the most brutal parts of the game. Like that combat is wow. But the YouTuber Rad Brad was doing a big thing on the during The Last of Us, and I watched every single episode after class, after school. When I got home, I would watch it before bed or sometime before homework or after homework or doing lines, and I would just watch every episode. And I'm like, this is – every upload, I should say. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is fucking amazing, this game. Like, I was invested. I'm watching all the cutscenes. I'm watching the gameplay mechanics. By the way, Rad Brad – I do like you. I've watched you really from the beginning. You're a bad video game player. Like, God, my God, watching
is
you.
Is he still uploading?
He's still uploading. He did it in the Dark Ages. It was great. Right. But as a gameplay, as a gamer, it's like, oh my God, dude, you're frustrating to watch because it's like, it's right there. It's right there. It's right the fuck there. But anyway, I watched it. And then when I got my first check on my job, I bought a PS3 and it was The Last of Us bundle. And I played the hell out of that game. And then I got a PS4, and I rebought it with the DLC. And I played that game even so much more. I will tell you this. I've played all 7 difficulties of The Last of Us.
Ooh, including grounded mode, where they get rid of your HUD. And
they get rid of everything.
They get rid of everything.
They get rid of everything.
Including the, like, you can, including your radar senses. Like, you can't use that anymore.
I have played all 7 difficulties of The Last of Us on the PS4. And that's me replaying the game when I played it already twice on the PS3. I love the first game a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this about the first season of The Last of Us. World building's amazing. That is amazing world building.
The production design,
the world building, the science, because the show opens up with
They elaborate more than the game does.
Yeah, yeah. No, the show opens up with a 1970-esque talk show.
Yeah, it's like the Dick Cavett show or something.
And by the way, the actor, first of all, the 3 actors, they're character actors. You've seen them before and stuff.
Oh yeah, one of them, he only had like 2 lines, but I recognize Christopher Heyerdahl.
Yes!
He played like, he played this great character on Stargate Atlantis, this like charming Wraith guy. He was also in Sanctuary. He was a minor staple of the Sci-Fi Channel back in the day.
He had a character in Hell on Wheels.
Okay, yeah.
And then the guy hosting the show, we've seen him as just the plucky nerd.
Yes.
In various shit. He was in The Internship with Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson, but the guy who brings down the house to show you how scientific they brought to the show of like, no, this shit could happen.
Mm-hmm.
He played.
I've seen that actor. Like, he was
the Mummy movie. The Mummy movies.
Yes, he was in the Mummy movies. He was like in a season of Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's been in a lot of
Spartacus, Blood and Sand.
Mm-hmm.
He's done some indie films. He's British.
Yes.
Yeah. They bring down the house. These 3 actors. They set the stage for the whole series of basically like, this could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if a fungal thing got to this level where it could cross over to controlling humans, it's just game over.
Yeah.
You might as well eat your gun. That's how he put it, basically.
Yeah.
And what's nice is when it gets now cuts to our main character Joel with his daughter and his brother, and as the like the game, it's Joel's birthday.
It's, yeah.
They specifically show you that the characters never eat a carbohydrate.
They make it, I guess, more complicated, but also I think in a way that allows the story of the show to make more sense.
Well, it's grounded.
Yeah. In the game, it's just like, oh, there was some outburst of spores somewhere, and it's in the air.
And the world got fucked over. That's it.
No, it got into the food.
The food supply, and specifically the food that every human being eats, even if you're vegan, a vegetarian, doesn't matter. It got into the bread.
It got into her bread. It got into her grains and pancakes, and
cookies. That's hardcore shit.
Yeah.
Like, and the fact that it got into the bread, the specific food that no matter what your religion is, what your diet is, what your restrictions are, what you choose to be your lifestyle, you're screwed. You're just screwed.
I'm glad they kind of ditched the spore is in the air idea. Well, until they brought it back in a very interesting way. But I'm glad they ditched that, because one thing I found stupid in the game was like, Joel would walk into an area and it's like, spores, and put on his mask and he's fine. It's like, well, how do you know you didn't breathe that stuff? It reminds me of that scene in Phantom Menace where they try to gas the Jedi.
And they're breathing in before they hold their breath.
Which I guess their face isn't enveloped in the fog machine yet.
Yes, because it's nipple, because the gas was nipple level, they didn't get...
They were okay, but so they breathed in a little bit and they were fine. And that's how I always felt when Joel would walk into a spore area, and I'm like, oh, I'm sure you breathed some of that stuff,
funny?
And you didn't know.
You're walking to it, it's like you're walking at it, and it's like, oh, it's literally just down the hall, and it's like you're getting closer while you put your mask on, and I'm like, wouldn't you back up? Like, oh shit.
I kind of wish there was like an action you can do where you see a spore area, and then.
Yeah.
And then you, it's kind of like in Call of Duty with like the night vision goggles, where it's like you could press a button
to
do that.
No, it's like the Metro games with the gas mask.
Yeah, and I wish that was like an action, but instead it's just an automatic thing.
It's a dialogue. It's a dialogue thing.
And it's like if you forget to put the mask on, I don't know, it's like an instant death where Joel just goes, and then you gotta go back.
it is funny. But yeah, no, the show is grounded in reality of what it would be like. The first season, the majority of the episodes open up with a different character story in the different part of the world and how they were interacting with the start of the virus. The Filipino woman, the doctor, the Filipino doctor.
We got a bomb, everyone.
The Filipino doctor opening, I forget which episode it was.
Was it Philippines or was it Indonesia?
Oh my God, maybe it was Indonesia.
Somewhere
but
in the
an Indonesian doctor, that was awesome, where she's just talking to the general.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, and she's like trying to hold back tears. She's like, you got to bomb the city. He's like, haha, what are you talking about? No, bomb the city. That's how you stop it.
Like, it's done. Like,
and then she says, can I call? And then she says very cheery, like, can I just call my daughter to say goodbye? And I'm like, oh my God, she's even dead. The fuck? No, the show, the first season is grounded in a lot of reality. Every detail they'll use, and like, TV shows have a lot of like filler shots.
Mm-hmm.
Of stuff that has really nothing to do with the actual like dialogue plot, that's detailed of like, no, this is how it'd be. It'd be like this. This is how it has to be. Like, it's almost like they recruited scientists for the show, like as consultants. The show is grounded in reality. What they do to the characters, the show can go fuck itself.
Please elaborate, because I was looking for that on my second watch through, and I was like. I was like, okay, Ellie is a little more headstrong
in the
show.
I don't care about that. No. Well, she's a kid in that show. In season two, she's just an idiot. So here's the thing. And I'll say this because I heard some, again, like season two, the dumb criticism crap. Who gave a shit if Joel's actual biological daughter was like black or whatever? It's like, and? Like, I didn't give a fuck about that. Like, well, in the game, she's this blonde little blue-eyed girl. I'm like this. She dies in 5 minutes. Like, who gives a fuck? Again, there are certain criticisms that are bullshit.
Yeah.
This is my criticism.
Yeah.
One, since we're going to go slightly in chronological order of the 9 episodes of this season, Joel isn't a drug addict. Why they had to throw that in there? Go fuck yourself, Neil Druckmann. He's not a drug addict in the game. They made him a drug addict in the show.
I don't even remember that.
It was a quick thing. He's popping pills. It's very quick. There's a quick montage at the end of episode one where he's popping pills. And not popping pills because he's in pain. He's popping narcotics.
Does that lead to anything?
No. Because the point in the game...
Because I don't even remember that.
Because in the game, they're not smuggling drugs. They're smuggling legit... In the game, him and Tess, Joel and Tess, are smuggling legit... People need these supplies to live. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of smugglers they are. In the game, it's like this. Oh, just have him pop the pills. I'm like, the fuck? They're not Quaaludes. Like, he's not a drug addict. He doesn't even drink. In the game, he literally does not drink. That's the whole point. Like, mm-hmm. they're adding shit for no fucking reason. The second thing... And this is a big pisser for me. There's actually a few, I should admit. I was really pissed off during this. I hate watched this. Hey, I hate watched it. That's a throwback. Yes. Marlene, the leader of the Fireflies. Marlene is Ellie's basically adoptive aunt. Her mom, Ellie's mom and Marlene were gal pals. Mm-hmm. And Marlene's her aunt. And in the show, when we really see Marlene and introduced to Ellie before, like, the Ellie Joel moment introduction, she has Ellie chained up, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, dude, that's your niece. Like, I get you thinking, like, oh, we gotta see she's not affected. I'm like, in the game, you were so maternal and protective of her and holding her under your arm. You have her chained up like a fucking dog. Like, who the... What? Like, that was out of the blue. I'm like, what the hell?
It was... Yeah, it was a big change.
There was no love.
I kind of appreciated the change... Because what that did... In the game, you're introduced to Ellie through Joel. But in the show, Ellie gets introduced ahead of that. So, like, she has her own POV before she's united with Joel. And it was a way... In the show, it was a way to introduce Ellie's personality, that she's not just some underage damsel.
No. She's a tomboy.
She's a tomboy. You don't fuck with her. And she's got an attitude. And it was a way to set that up. And to me, there was a logical sense behind it, in that, okay, so this is after... Because later we find out why she, what led to that, and then through the flashback episode with her. And so it kind of makes sense. Okay, the Fireflies find her, she's bit, but she's not changing. They don't know what to make of that, therefore they can't immediately trust her, so they always have to, like, check her every day. And they do, like, the, you know, the counting thing, which actually comes back into play in the second season.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Cleverly.
But they didn't have to chain her. They could have just had her in a locked room. These things, the infected aren't smart. They're just mindless. So the fact that they had her chained, and the way Marlene was talking to her, I'm like, whoa, there is no love. I'm not feeling any ounce of love. That's
It was a very different dynamic and a very different relationship. That's but I didn't mind that change.
I hated that because that destroys, again, the ending of how the game was supposed to be played. Like, the show. To me, the whole thing Neil Druckmann was trying to do for the TV shows is just like this. Yeah, we messed up in game two because of the quote-unquote the fans, so I'm going to make Joel more of a hero. I'm like, dude, fuck you. Like, you fuck you. Like, Marlene isn't a bad person. Like, you took away the whole concept of Marlene's character by making her chain up Ellie, but whatever. Mm. And then the next big thing that was dumb is, okay, through their travels, they get out of Boston, they lose Tess. I thought the way they showed the way the hive mind of the Cordyceps was cool, how they're all connected, where if you step on, if you not only hurt an infect, like kill an infected, or step on something that's connected, like the way the spores are, or the vines, I should say, it could attract infected miles away. I love that concept. But basically, like, you're just fucked.
Yeah.
I like that. I love that. The world building, again, great. They didn't need to change Bill. That one rubbed me wrong.
That might be my least favorite episode of that season, because that's the one change from the game I think I didn't like. Not just because it changed something from the game, but also, to me, it doesn't really... It's the kind of episode that the show didn't earn. I tend to like when television shows will take, like, do an episode on a character who's always been, like, a peripheral character, and do something, you know, alone with them, given their own solo story. That's, like, something you do season two onward, and even then, you kind of have to establish that character ahead of time. It was so un-TV-like, the fact that they did an entire episode on this character that we had never met before, and it was episode 3.
Yeah.
And it makes for a nice little short film, And if you just stop the episode after Frank and Frank and Bill go into the bedroom, if you just stop the episode of that after that, it's a very sweet little film.
They just didn't need to change Bill's characteristic. That's the thing. I actually liked it. Maybe, you know what it is? You're right. Season 3 isn't earned television-wise. Episode 3 was not earned television-wise. Episode 3 was literally that concept of this is just for the fans.
And it undermined the purpose of Bill in the game, which the purpose of Bill is if you cut off personal affection from your life, yeah, you'll survive, but you'll become a horrible person. He was like a fractured mirror of Joel. And a lot of the allied characters that you meet in the first game of The Last of Us are mirrors of Joel and Ellie in some way. And that was the purpose of Bill in the game. He was just very miserable.
He's a dick. He's a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
He was such an asshole.
And they really soften on the show, therefore that theme. They basically kind of tell don't show that theme where like he gives Joel a letter and like his deathbed letter and is like, I've learned a lesson. Don't cut off people from your life. You'll end up miserable. I've learned that lesson the good way. And I think my life turned out very well. So
and that's why
it was very, very soft. In the game, it was a lot more in your face, a lot hardcore.
Well, in the game, after you get through the whole town with Bill, you find his partner Frank hung himself because he was infected. And Frank's deathbed letter was, "Fuck you, Bill. Just go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. Suck my dick." That's what it was.
You could tell Bill was very hurt by that.
Yeah. And what did Bill say? "Fuck you, then."
But he's definitely holding back tears when he does it. Yeah.
Bill's purpose in the game was to show you, like, hey, you want to survive and, like, have the best resources of all time and literally own a town?
Yeah.
Be a cut-off asshole.
Yeah.
In the game, that whole, like, yeah, open your heart up. I'm like, God, fuck you.
In the show,
it was all about, like, yeah, hold on to love. Be a good guy. Hold on to that hope. It's like, fuck you, Neil. The whole point of the game is you're the bad guy. Stop trying to save Joel. I can't wait for what happens to him in the second episode of season 2. Like, fuck you for trying to, like, make us like Joel. Like, if you're a real fan of the game, the whole point of Joel was that you were playing the bad guy the whole time. That's the Nick Offerman was the best choice for Bill in a TV show.
Yeah.
Because of cast-wise. But they just butchered the character.
It was a very strange choice.
And I'll say this. I like how they made the size of the town so small, because I'm like, yeah, no, you don't have to do this big thing like the video game did. It can be super simple and put and really just to the point.
Mm-hmm.
They just took it away. And then after that, I was just really just hating the show. The next allies you meet, it's Sam and his brother, right?
Yeah.
What was his brother's name? I just know Sam.
I forget what the brother's name was. They did something different with the brother where... In the game, he's, like, the same age as Ellie.
Yeah.
And so they're, like, same age buddies. And if you want to read, maybe there's a little something there, but then...
It's cutesy stuff.
But then in the show, and I like this in the show, where they made him deaf. And I think the actors, actually...
No. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. It's a cool little thing, yeah.
And therefore, and so it really, really punctuated this idea that Sam... is truly this kid's caretaker, and like he is only...
No, Sam is the kid.
Wait, who's the brother?
I forget the name. That's what I'm saying. I just know the kid's name.
The two black guys.
Sam's brother.
The only ones in the whole show.
Sam is the deaf kid. Sam's brother, as you were pointing it, is the protector thing, and that's what's cool.
Yeah.
And it's a cool, like, what, two episodes, right? It really is cool. I even love the fact that they added, like, oh, what happened to the city? I'm like, oh, this is fun. Why not? In the game, it's just, oh, you're just in Shitsville.
Because
Sam and his brother are basically a group of people who are migrating, and they went into the wrong town, and the raiders just destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the last two survivors, and they just want to get the fuck out.
But then the show, they established that Melanie Lynskey from Yellow Jackets is running the town.
Because of a coup, of a political coup. Well, it was a coup.
Yeah.
And then they took it further by attacking your neighbors that sold you out.
Yeah, it's like a French Revolution gone wrong type situation.
And by the way, cool note, the character Melanie plays,
yeah,
her second in command is the voice actor for Tommy. That guy looks, that guy, I did not expect him to look like that. I'm like, dude, that's a beard.
Yeah.
That's a fucking beard you got on.
That's how they incorporated some of the game actors in there.
I think it was four or five of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, Troy Baker was in the...
second to last.
In the Cannibal Town.
Mm-hmm.
And then the original Ellie.
I forget her name. We've seen her stuff. She plays the mom. Which makes sense.
Yeah, she plays Ellie's mom, where we actually get to see a reveal of how Ellie came to be and why she is the way she is.
Which made sense. I had a feeling it was that, too, honestly.
Some of that stuff Neil Druckmann has talked about, like, these were story ideas that he had in his head for years, and that he couldn't figure out how to incorporate them in the games and thought about...
I'm surprised that wasn't in the DLC, honestly, when you think about it.
Probably couldn't figure out how to make a game out of it. It was just, you know, a nice little idea.
Well... That was great. That's how you do fan service.
So basically, the core problem you seem to have with the first season of The Last of Us was that the antagonism of Marlene and other little things you saw as making Joel more, like, subliminally making Joel more sympathetic in the audience's mind. And that's the issue you took with it.
Character butchering. To me, what they did was if they made Hagrid a bully in the movies. That's how I saw it. I thought the world building was great. I thought the production designs were awesome. I thought the moments, like I said, how the majority of every episode opened up with like almost like a quick side character who was in a different part of the world. Mm-hmm. I loved all that shit. I loved how the zombies looked like. You know what I loved about the show? They barely fought the zombies. Because when you think about it, because in a game, when you fight a zombie, you take damage, but you move on.
And you're mowing down enemies left and right.
You're like beating the shit out of them. But in the real life, it's like this. Actually, no. One-on-one combat with just one zombie, you're dead. You're actually dead because you can't get scratched. You can't get drooled on. You can't get anything happen to you. You just can't get touched.
Yeah, like a real person would not be able to survive that many enemies like that.
You have to be in full-on riot gear with an automatic.
So I love...
A juggernaut suit.
Yeah.
When Call of Duty was good. No, you are right. The way the show basically had barely any zombie interaction, I'm like, I buy it. It made the cordyceps dangerous. It made the clicker scarier.
Yes.
It made the infected horde more of like a, oh, it's just game over. We're just watching a slaughter.
And they didn't use them as much. So when they did come up, it really was terrifying.
Like I said, I loved every bit of it except the character butchering.
Okay.
But that was, to me, Neil trying to amend, quote-unquote, for the backlash he got for Game 2, which is Season 2. Other than that, that's how I feel about the show overall. So...
Well, that's... So we talked about Season 1. Season 2 just happened. And I have some more mixed thoughts. To put my position, you played all of Game 2. I then started playing Last of Us 2.
Which is two games in one, let's be first off, folks.
It's really thick.
It's really two games in one.
And I got over the halfway point of the game. And then I got to this one section where it was, like, pretty stressful and scary. It's like you're in the dark, you only have a flashlight, and they're coming at you from every corner. And that got me riled up too much that I took a break.
Doesn't that show you how great the game is, though?
I know. It's so... And I'm playing on medium. Like, I'm playing on normal. Oh,
I'll say this. The second game, I played on hard, and I couldn't do anything more. I was struggling on hard. It's a hard... The second game is hard as hell.
Yeah.
The second game is so insane.
Yeah. And so I took a break, and then... played Red Dead Redemption 2, and I haven't gone back to Last of Us 2. And so I was gambling on the fact that... I had played past where the second season was going to end, and therefore not much was going to be spoiled for me. And I was pretty much right when it was done. The first season is 9 episodes, but really it's 10, if you think about it, because the first episode's 2 hours long.
Right.
And the reason, and the reason they did that was because they wanted the first episode to introduce both Joel and Ellie. So they didn't want the first week of people watching the show to just be Joel and then Ellie to be introduced after. They wanted it all in the first installment.
They had to do groundwork.
So they had like a double length premiere. So really it's 10 episodes, which is kind of like the standard for cable and streaming nowadays.
It's 10 episodes a season.
I remember especially when 13 was the standard, but can't have that anymore. Too expensive.
I remember walking to 23 as an hour. I was like, damn, 23-hour-long episodes. Good for you guys.
But the second season was 7. Man, did it, and did it feel like only 7. I've been noticing, and okay, so it's 2025. We're 2 years out from a Hollywood work stoppage thanks to the actors and the writers going on strike, which is 3 years after another work stoppage due to COVID, which if it wasn't for COVID, those strikes probably would have happened in 2020 instead of 2023.
Yeah.
So the streaming honeymoon is over. The era of we're just going to lavishly spend to build up our streaming platforms in hopes that something will stick and we'll be able to make a profit and compete with Netflix. That's done. That era's done. It's all about contraction, baby. It's all about, like, how can we spend less money so that we can actually make money? And on television, where that is being taken out, and you're seeing this all over television.
Everywhere.
So, like, on, like, broadcast, you know, a lot of, like, procedural murder mystery cop show stuff, instead of like 22 episode seasons, it's now maybe 20 or maybe 18. Fox just did a big renewal on all their animated stuff, so like Simpsons, Bob's Burgers, Family Guy, American Dad, 4 seasons for each show, but each season is only 15 episodes.
What the fuck?
So really they're only paying for 60 episodes. So it may seem like they signed a big check now, but in the long run, they're actually spending less money.
Is it really only going to be 15 episodes for Bob's Burgers next season?
15 episodes next season for Bob's
That's
Burgers.
That's disgusting.
Yep. Granted, they've already produced over 200 episodes.
But that's no, but no, 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 but no, 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 no. You can't do. There are certain shows where it's like the one season's about this one storyline, so you don't have that many episodes.
Yeah.
Those kind of shows.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob's Burgers and various other shows are like, you know, you watch this throughout the year because you get to watch the holiday special, the Thanksgiving special, the, you know, Christmas special, mm-hmm. the New Year's special, the weird special, the funny special, the we went back to school special, the this. The whole point of, like, Bob's Burger-like episodes is you watch it for the majority of the year because those characters are doing the same year that you do.
It's kind of like,
you can't do that in 15 fucking episodes.
It's like the choice is you either produce the same number of episodes but for less money, which means you won't be able to do as much stuff and it will be noticeable, or you spend the same amount of money per episode, you just don't make as many, and then you can keep the same production quality. I remember when it was the other way for the final season of Star Trek Enterprise, and they had to do a lot of two-parters and three-parters just so they can, like, they can build the same quality sets and have the same quality special effects, but then they can use them across multiple episodes instead of the normal Planet of the Week stuff, which is actually why that's part of why that was actually the best season of that whole show. But yeah, it's like, no, just don't produce as many episodes so we can keep our quality up.
And that's why I actually have no anger towards season 2 at all, because I just realized after the 4th episode, I'm like, I can't judge this. You can't really judge this because it feels so short. It feels so rushed.
You feel like they're just going through the story beats very quickly. I guess we didn't give a spoiler warning ahead of time, but I guess that should be assumed. So, like, Joel dies. Well, we already said Joel dies in the second game, and that's the catalyst for Ellie to go on her own cross-country journey, except she's doing it for revenge.
Rampage!
Which is something they talk about a lot in the podcast. It's like, you know, that's the difference between Ellie and Joel. If Ellie died, Joel would probably just kill himself. But Joel's dead. Ellie wants revenge. And so it's like a different angle of the how far are you willing to go for someone you love. It's like, well, I'm going to go get back at the people that took my pseudo daddy away.
But what sucks with Ellie is in the game when that happened, it was the way Joel died was an intimate death that had really just nothing to do with the overall life of the town of Jackson they lived in. It was just like a sneak, it was just a quick in death, boom, gone. In the show,
oh, they did some crazy shit during that. It was like the Battle of Winterfell. Because, like,
that's what it was. Time, that's what it fucking was.
It was almost convenient that the town was distracted while the big It just so happened the zombies upright. You'd have thought the plot, they could have done something where the plot was that Abby and her crew, Abby's the new character that we kind of
Abby's the daughter of the surgeon who was going to do the surgery on Ellie that Joel shot in the head.
Which should be a bigger spoiler for the show, but I'll get to why it's not. It would have been interesting if Abby and friends, like, plotted a way to, like, get the zombies to go after Jackson as some sort of way that they could get to Joel. But it's just convenient that that happened the way it did.
You saying that, I actually thought that's what the episode 3 council meeting was going to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, they attacked us just for one guy. That's what I literally thought someone in the council meeting was going to say.
Yeah.
After Joel's death and the assault on Jackson, I thought someone in the council was like this. Do you think they actually did that to us just to get Joel out so they could kill Joel and they destroyed our town at the same time?
Right?
No one said that!
No one brought it up, and which tells you, like, the writers didn't even consider that. It happened. Well, it's like, when it happened, I was like, oh, we're already here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just something weird about that structure. Like, seven is a weird structure for narrative.
Might as well call it a miniseries.
I thought Joel was going to last to, like, episode 3.
That's what I thought. When you said that during episode 1, I thought that.
Because they were setting up some things with him. You know, his new role in the town. Him having kind of philosophical differences on, like, taking people in. Well, we don't have enough resources to help everybody. And it's funny, it kind of reminded me of that game you showed me, Frostpunk.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we don't have enough houses for them. And we can't build the houses fast enough.
Suffer in the cold.
So it reminded me of that. I thought they were going... And then his therapy session with Catherine O'Hara, who's great in the show, the little she's in, she's wonderful. I thought they were going to do a little bit more than that. I thought, and I'm just thinking, like, rule of threes. We're going to see, like, this again in episode 2. It's a way to kind of lull us into a false sense of security. And then, bam, episode 3. Joel gets it. But it happens so quickly, which is a surprise. But it gave me the sense of, like, oh, we're already off. And as the show kept going, I was like, oh, we're here already. We're doing this already. We're doing this already. The introduction of the Seraphites was so fucking quick. It was like 10 minutes.
Didn't even feel like 10 minutes.
Where it's like they stumble into a park and like, whoop, that's Seraphite territory. They're like, what? And then we get introduced to the properly introduced to the Seraphites, not including that one scene earlier. And it happens so quickly. And we just get this, like, Cliff Notes version of, like, whoa, the Seraphites are kind of crazy. Oh, them with their whistles and them using primitive weapons. Whoa. And I thought, like, you know, a television show is supposed to kind of film is supposed to kind of flesh things out that a game can't. Because in the end, the game's purpose is gameplay.
Yeah.
And granted, The Last of Us is one of those few video games that actually lends itself really well to film. Because they were making it with kind of emulation of cinema in mind. But yeah, the show, I just felt like they were rushing through things.
And that's why I know there's certain things that I don't like about the season 2 where I'm like, really? That? Really? That? Overall, I'm like, I have no emotions towards it because it's so rushed. I feel like I have to just wait for season 3 to then rewatch it all.
And I'm just speculating that the episode count is for money reasons. Like, that was a studio. Oh,
we know that, but it ruins
it. I don't know that for sure. Maybe that was a creative choice, but it just feels that way.
But it ruins it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, oh, well, I'm just watching this because we're going to talk about it now at this point. It's like, I can't judge this show at all. I'm like, I know you're doing some things that I don't care for, game comparison to show, but...
Yeah.
I'm like, why are you rushing? Why are you rushing this? Why is this so short?
I didn't feel like there was a lot new being discovered.
No.
In the show, in the first season, they added a lot of new things to kind of unpack. Like, you know, the what was it? Was it Kansas City or was it the Melanie Lynskey's town?
But Kansas City.
Yeah, like, she wasn't in the game, and that the whole nature of that part of the world building was not in the game, but it was something new for the show.
Yeah.
The cannibal town. it's sort of implied that who's the creepy guy that runs it?
David.
It's kind of implied that he might be a preacher, but then in the show they go all in of like, oh, he's a preacher.
He's a Christian extremist.
He's a Christian extremist who's like, yeah, everybody has to go along with this cannibal diet.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the way we survive.
At least they took the pedophilia undertones away from the, like in the game.
He still tried to rape her in the end.
But it was played differently.
Okay, all right.
It wasn't like...
He's still a fucking creep.
No, he's a creeper, but they change some stuff, but they make it interesting in the game where it's like, hey, we get to see about these people. Because in the game, all you saw was his henchmen, and that was it. Mm-hmm. In the show, it's like...
You get to see the community and how
they're acting, how they're being. And the one thing you can say about David, at least as a leader, mm-hmm. he does make sure everyone eats first.
Yeah.
Even though they're eating people. It's kind of interesting. It's interesting to see a cult leader make sure everyone else gets fed first before him. It's kind of interesting.
You lure them in with kindness. And it's like...
His soft voice.
That first season introduced new elements to the narrative they were already recreating that it made it feel fresh. Even on rewatch, it felt fresh. And I didn't feel that with this second season. It felt like they didn't have time to do any of that.
It feels like the Jackson assault took up all the time.
Even the new stuff with Isaac that they had, you know, like when he throws the grenade in the...
That was such the origin a cool story. Introduction to the wolves.
Yes.
and how they fleshed out the torture scene where in the game you just see the aftermath.
Yes.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted more of. I'm like, fuck, man. Like, you got Jeffrey Wright. You're wasting him.
That's what season 3 is going
to
be,
I hope
guess.
To God.
But I'm also like, are they going to bum rush through that? Because I know what section of the game they're going to do. Are they going to bum rush through that too like they did here?
They say that there's going to be one or two more seasons. Season 3 and 4. 4 is a possibility, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the game is so large.
The only other thing I didn't like about season 2, these are two big things that kind of affect everything.
Yeah.
The first was the pacing. Pacing I thought was way too fast. The second was the introduction of Abby and how very upfront with her motivations they were. The thing I liked about the game, even though I had this spoiled to me accidentally online of who Abby was and what her deal was, but I, when playing the game, I realized, oh, this is a mystery. What does Abby want? Why does she want to kill Joel? And I wish the show kept it that way. I wish the show went full J.J. Abrams mystery box on that idea of like, and also Ellie, you don't find out until through Ellie, why she did what she did. But the first scene, the very opening scene, you see her and her buddies clearly connected to the Fireflies that Joel massacred somehow. They're burying the dead, and they're like, we gotta get back at Joel. It's like, well, we gotta prepare first. You know, we're not in a state to do that right now. We gotta bide our time, blah, 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 blah. But the only thing they don't tell you is, well, who was the person she loved?
Yeah.
Who was the person that she wants to get revenge for? But at that point, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. It's like, okay, she's connected to all of that. There's no... And therefore, when Ellie... Oh, yeah, and then she kills Joel, and she tells Joel... We get to see her telling Joel exactly why she's there. And like, oh, the mystery's gone. They just told us. They didn't show us, they told us.
The game did it better.
The game showed us, because the you have like the flashback levels where she's interacting with her dad, and then you have the flashback level where she's going through the hallway and opens the door and there's her dad and she's crying over her dad, and that's how you find out. I would have liked if they kept that a secret that way, and even more if they really leaned into that secret more, that it and actually have it that Ellie finds out, like, and that's like we find out through Ellie, our actual protagonist. That way it's... Because otherwise, like, Ellie goes out for revenge, and that's all it is. She wants revenge. And it's just a matter of, like, is she gonna find Abby? Is she gonna not find Abby? Is she gonna get killed before then? Oh, no. You know, there's no lingering questions that it's like, well, theoretically, Ellie is also trying to solve a mystery.
And also, too, like I said at the beginning of this episode, there was two things to it. It's revenge, the mystery... But her revenge is fueled by, I didn't get a chance to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
That's what her... It's not just pure on, let's fucking get him. It's more like, I have to get him to make myself feel better because I didn't forgive Joel.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
Yeah.
Because in the big... And we should say...
They do hint at that at the show.
Barely. That's what I'm saying. Because in the game... To let people know, the way the first game ends and the first season ends, Joel lies to Ellie about what happened in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point. The second game is she finds out and is upset because Ellie wanted to have her life be meaning in this horrible, fucked up world, and she could have saved the world, and she would have felt like her soul would have felt good with that.
Mm-hmm.
In the game, it shows that better of Ellie's trying... She was mad at Joel because she found out the truth, and then he dies, and she's like, fuck, I didn't get a chance to, like, forgive and grieve properly and la, la, la. Now it's just, I gotta... And that's why I'm gonna go kill Abby and her friends, because I didn't get my chance. In the show, it's just, let's go fuck them up.
Yeah, and there wasn't much more to that. So it's just kind of, again, leads to that going to the motions. When are we going to get to the next plot beat? And
what happened to Shimmer?
Yeah.
And to be honest, I kind of wish that there was... Because they do show the scene where Joel tells her.
And I...
No, she finds out on... She in the show, she figures that out on her own. And then she confirms with Joel. In the game, she finds out from Joel, then they have their fight, and then...
But it's like something she's always...
But she...
Suspected, and she brings that on.
But in the game, she goes back to Salt Lake City to find the truth, remember?
Oh, yeah.
In the show, it's just...
It's more...
Something's not adding up in my head. There's that moment with the psychiatrist's husband that makes her feel like, okay, I've seen that face before, he's a liar. By the way, do you know who plays a psychiatrist's husband?
It's Joey Pants.
Isn't that awesome? Isn't that awesome that he's still acting?
Yeah.
Isn't that so cool to see him?
I didn't even recognize him. Like, I'm like, has it been that long since The Matrix?
Yes. And U.S. Marshals.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw him first, I'm like, who the fuck? I know that voice. Who the fuck? I know. Oh, my God.
I like that approach compared to the game, where instead of her going to Salt Lake City, it's more about... her interactions with Joel. Something that Druckmann and Mazin talk about is whether or not Ellie knew from the get-go that Joel was lying but was willing to accept the lie until shit starts happening to where she can't accept the lie anymore. They don't say in those interviews like whether or not they lean one way or another. It's kind of more... like ambiguous, you know, leave it up to the actor's performance, which I think is how Neil Druckmann works anyway. Like the whole thing about is Bill gay in the game. I think that was something the actor asked Neil, and Neil said, what do you think? And then just kind of let the actor play it how he wanted. And the actor was like, I think he's gay. And then played it like that. And then kind of left that implied to the player.
You know, I'm glad you kind of brought up that part, because there's always been something in my head that kind of angers me with fans of the game that hate the second game, or people who criticize this show alone, who either the game or the show. There's a sign. Isn't it so fucking stupid that, like, the way people are upset at season two for, like, they're going to throw this lesbian love interest, who cares? And I'm like...
Which is what they complained about with the first...
And in my head... Yeah, the point, and here's the thing, though. In the first game, through the DLC... Sorry, folks, we're going to kind of split off a bit, because this is something that's always annoyed me. In the first game, in the DLC, you find out Ellie's lesbian. In the DLC.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You brought up Bill's actor saying, like, hey, I'm noticing something. Is he gay? And then the director said, figure it. It's all... Yeah. Yeah.
The original actor, not...
The original actor. So the original voice actor, when... By the way, the video games weren't... just voice actors. They were actors using motion capture. This is to show you
they're doing physical acting.
To show you the quality of these video games, it's literally they're using actors, not voice actors.
That's like the standard for a lot of AAA games.
Nowadays, yeah. But the thing is, during the game, before the DLC, during the game, when you're watching Ellie and Joel's interactions and conversations, in the game, I was like, she's gay. Like, here's the thing, this isn't like some BS, like, last minute forced on. You can tell in the game Ellie's a lesbian.
Mm.
Like, you can, it's so in your fucking face. And I'm like, when I played the game, I'm like,
your gaydar just went off.
It's like, is she gay? I think she's gay.
It is, and Pride Month, so
it's funny that we're on Pride Month. Yeah.
Fruitful topic for this time of year.
But when the game came out, I always knew. I'm like, Ellie's gay. In the DLC, I'm like, oh, you find out that she had a crush on a girl. I'm like, this, okay, knew it. Called it. Called it. You can just tell. Called it. Yeah. And with Bill, even Bill, I was like playing the game. I'm like, something's off, and it's not because he's a psychotic asshole. Yeah. Oh, Frank, knew it.
Yeah, they're more than just friends.
Yeah, and so in the show, the season 2 one, it's like, yeah, we like, of course, Ellie's older. She's going to have an intimate scene with a chick.
Yeah. Well, she's like 19 by that point.
Yeah, who's not kissing? And it's also, too, it's like, yeah, who's not kissing a girl?
Yeah.
At any point in time, at 19. So I just side note, I think it's dumb that, like, the whole, like, oh, this is being thrusted upon, or, like,
it got, like, this season got review bombed badly.
And it's
Rotten Tomatoes.
And the thing is, I'm so against those review bombs, because I'm like,
that's why I don't trust user reviews.
You can't judge this show at all because of how short it is, mm-hmm. how rushed it is, and, again, for me, people are just so, like, it was all about Joel and Ellie. I'm like, the point of season one and game one is Joel took the evil ending choice in a video game, and you had no control of that as a mm-hmm. video game player. You have no control of the whole, like, do you take the good ending or the bad? No, you're just getting the bad ending. We don't give a fuck about you as a gamer. You're getting mm-hmm. the bad ending. And the best part about the second game, because and the second show, how realistic is showing is this is called karma.
It's the consequences of those choices,
and you never get that in a game. And you kind of rarely get that in a show. Because when you look at season one's ending, mm-hmm. that's a series finale.
Well, the first game is like a complete story.
That's what I'm saying. This
so
is a
like,
series
it
finale.
They didn't need to make a sequel.
And that's why I love the second game. Because in video game history, we finally got to have a game where it's like this. Hey, remember that evil ending that was chosen? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going to play the sequel. Oh, shit!
The best sequels are usually the ones that deal with the consequences of what happened the first time around.
People negatively panned the second game for, like, this is just suffer porn and just narcissism porn. I'm like this. Yes! Because Joel made a choice.
That's it's reflective of the
Joel. Character. If your lead character says, fuck the world, let it burn... What do you think the world's going to be like? Guess what, people? Seattle sucks. Seattle just sucks.
That's a good point, you know.
And that's why I love the game, and that's why I kind of am actually bummed about season two. Not because of the bullshit Jackson thing they threw in. Not because of this bullshit they did or that BS they did against the game. It's like being a chance to actually see the first half of the game.
Yeah.
We got a lot of rushed beats. I wanted more of Eugene. He's such a cool... That actor was amazing.
Yeah.
I kind of... They throw in that Tommy and his wife have a son. I want that dynamic. Mm-hmm. Tommy and his wife are the mayor.
Yeah, they lead the town.
They run the town. I want to see the kid. That's mm-hmm. that's the heir.
Yeah.
That's Joel's nephew.
Yeah.
In the game, Abby's crew is a crew of almost like 12. In the show, it's 5. I wanted that to me led to an opportunity of more dialogue talking. I wanted to see more of these characters that get killed.
Yeah, you feel like you don't get to know them very well, and I felt like
and they had so much personality.
I guess the second season is like you will get to know them because the third season, excuse me, because we're gonna see everything from Abby's perspective and see it. So we're gonna wait 2 years to find out.
Tater Tot's mad about the 2 year gap, or possibly 3, because the script isn't even written.
Meanwhile, you know that next season of The Bear is coming out really soon.
I know. That's what. It's just so crazy.
We didn't have to wait that long.
It's so crazy how for some shows you have to wait forever. Shit. Will I have another kid by the next season? I mean, really. Like, I moved in between seasons and had another kid, like House of the Dragon.
Tom is going to be in a mansion by the time the third season.
I'm going to win a lottery. I'll be living in Newport.
One thing I disagree with you is the idea of, like, not being able to judge. And I kind of see what you mean, like, can we really fault Craig, Neil, and Haley Gross, who was, like, the third writer that was credited for that season, can we really fault them for the pacing issues, which kind of affected our enjoyment of the show?
No.
And probably not. I mean, unless that was their creative choice. I mean,
if that was a creative choice to do 7 episodes, they can go fuck themselves.
Yeah, and they won't throw the studio. Of course, in public, they won't throw the studio under the bus.
A smart person won't.
No, and they haven't. I'm just guessing because of recent trends that they had they were mandated by the studio to make things shorter.
Specifically with this studio and this company, yeah. Yes.
But, and they're not bitching about it, so that's fair. We'll probably never know the real reason.
You're right. The average person doesn't realize that when something feels off when you go to watch it, you think, oh, the actor, oh, the director, yeah. Oh, the writer. It's like, no, it's the suit.
Yeah.
It's like at a restaurant. My order is wrong. What the fuck, waiter? What the fuck's your problem, waiter? No, it's the cook in the back.
Yeah, the cook didn't make a good meal. And
or they just read the tag wrong.
But, you know, it's the idea that we can't judge it properly or can't judge it
because
all.
Because behind-the-scenes stuff. Well, I think we can.
Yeah, we can. Because in the end, the art is what we got. And the reasons behind it can make a conversation interesting the more you think about it. I watched a movie that was in theaters, like, last weekend. And I thought the movie was a disjointed mess. And of course, knowing what I know, I thought, well, no writer and director will deliberately make it this messy. This feels like studio marketing fuckery.
Yep.
Liz, and I'm just thinking, like, with the writers, it's like, you had 10 hours to tell a story. Why are you giving yourself less time to tell a story this time when there's so many opportunities that you're missing on? Why would a writer want to blow those opportunities? So I'm coming to a conclusion based on having good faith, because I think the people making the writing the show are very talented.
Yeah.
I'm with that good faith, I'm assuming money was the reason. It's like they couldn't make as many episodes as they wanted, so they had to make their intended storyline fit within that. And but in the end, it's like, you know, it's part of a problem with our enjoyment of the show and why it didn't
deflated
feel as good.
It deflated me after episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, like our Pit, Paradise and Ugly episode, it's just like you're kind of fucking with the audience at this point now. Mm-hmm. Like, especially fans, not just fans of this game, but audiences overall. It's like your last season was 9 episodes, 10 hours. This one is 7 episodes. It feels like less than 7 hours. What's episode 3? It's like mm-hmm. the Game of Thrones things again.
Yeah.
It's like you can't keep doing this shit. And it's not like, well, those 7 episodes will have an extra 20 minutes each. It's like, no, it's the same fucking standard time of it all.
And something else I've been thinking about is, like, how big of a problem is this going to be when it's all said and done? When the show is complete and you could just watch it over the course of a couple of weeks. And therefore, you wouldn't really care as much about where each season ends.
No.
So it's just simply the next episode. Mm-hmm. And that's entirely dependent on how the next couple of seasons will unfold. But that's not a good position to be in as a viewer, where it's like, my enjoyment and feelings about the show overall are entirely dependent on the stuff that hasn't come out yet. And it's like, you know, there's something to be said about leaving the audience wanting more. But there's a difference between, like, making someone a good cheeseburger that's like, you know, and making them think, well, I want to come back to the restaurant, and giving someone a salad at a nice steakhouse and only giving them the salad and being like, well, maybe if I come back next time, I'll actually get a steak.
No. I guess the point of this episode is, like, the first one was like, yeah, okay, this is the conversation for the fans and the new people and the ones who really, the first season is about the conversation between a parent and a non-parent. That's really what the first season is, and the game.
Mm-hmm.
The game is just like you just get to finally play the bad guy and you don't realize it. The show is more about a parental conversation. The second one, it took away from the fun of having a debate conversation that Travis and I have been having for almost, 3 years of like, I fucking hate this show. Tom, I love this show. No, Travis, I fucking hate this show. Tom, this show's really enjoyable. No, Travis, this fucking show sucks. And now it's just like watching the second show, I'm just like, I just feel bad. I just feel deflated.
Well,
You know? I liked Eugene a lot, and he's technically in 2 to 3 levels in the game, and you only have him for, like, barely anything.
I will say, like, as far as TV video game adaptations go, I can't think of anything that's, at least for live action, I don't think there's been anything better than this.
Fallout.
Maybe Fallout. Fallout had a good first season, yes.
But the thing that sucks that I will say, because I have to honestly have a, to be fair at the same time, the Fallout TV show only works because the Fallout world is just, hey, it's an RPG, have fun. Like, it does, it's a broad game. Yeah. It's such an RPG game where you just have to get the world right. You don't have to get the characters right. Mm-hmm. The Last of Us is literally a single player experience campaign.
There is a very specific narrative that's being told.
The Fallout TV show, folks, works so well because when you play any Fallout game, it's just a, hey, you're in the world. Have fun.
Have fun. It's your playground. It probably also helped my enjoyment of Last of Us since by the time I started watching it, I had just finished that god-awful Halo TV show, and Last of Us was like...
damn, that sucks.
Last of Us was like, this is how you do it right.
Well, that's just...
Just fucking do it!
That's like you watching the Joss Whedon Justice League movie, and then watching the Batman and saying, yeah, this is how you do superheroes!
I thought you were gonna say the Zack Snyder Justice League.
No, I still think that sucks. I still think that sucks.
But I'm just saying, the bar is still relatively...
It's been raised.
Last of Us has helped raise the bar. And I hope every other adaptation, of which there will be, we got a God of War TV show coming out.
And Gears of War, I heard, right? Is it God of War, Gears of War, and Mass Effect?
Mass Effect, definitely. And they announced a proper showrunner who's actually worked on TV, so that gives me a little bit of hope, but I still have my doubts. Ronald D. Moore is making the God of War show, and I love him, so I have some hopes for that show, even though I don't know really much about God of War, but I'll watch it because he's behind it.
I think you're right, though, in the sense of elevation of TV show, because, again, The Last of Us so far, season 1 and 2, that is the standard of production value.
Oh, yeah.
And also, too, when you look at it more, it has elevated the game of what it means to be an extra and a side character and a supporting character. Like, ignore the leads for right now. For season 1 and 2, my God, I have never seen extras and supporting actors just be hitting yard on the stage in the camera. Like, they are hitting fucking home runs every single episode. The extras, the stunt people, side characters, it's
whatever.
They're just hitting home runs. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that before in a show. The way these extras are just kicking fucking ass. The Seraphite extras, I'm like, oh my God, this is like, fuck, give them the awards right now.
Yeah, they got some good blocking coaches.
Oh my God. And the way the torture scene was, I'm like, dude, this guy is kind of better than Jeffrey Wright.
Holy He's shit. Going toe-to-toe with him.
Yeah,
they got really good guest actors on that
guest
show.
Actors,
they know how to cast.
Spared
no expense.
Literally. the one Seraphite that got captured by the group of wolves and was just begging for mercy. I'm like, damn! Like, these are some good act. Like, I swear, maybe the strike just made everyone like, we're going to fucking act now. Because these extras are doing Oscar-winning performances. I have never seen extras give Oscar-winning performances before.
I mean, it's an HBO show. They put a lot of time into making those shows, which is why they take so long to make. But we're seeing... Whoops. We are seeing the end result of that.
We're seeing good production value and good acting that we have not seen before. Mm-hmm. And I hope this continues on the TV aspect. Just as a fan of the game, like I said, I hate the show, but I have to wait apparently 3 years for season 3 to fully talk about the second game, because we can only really talk about the first season and the first game in the sense of comparison. I'll say this, the casting choices are all spot on.
Yes.
I
like the casting.
I don't know
show.
Why everyone is giving, what's her name, Bella Ramsey?
Bella Ramsey, yeah.
Why they're giving her such a hard time of like, oh, she could never hold a show on her own, that's why the first season worked, now this one's just horrible. I'm like, there's no one who could play Ellie that could also foot the bill to promote a TV show. You're not going to get a brand new person to lead The Last of Us.
No, she's great.
She's great in the first one because she's the only... Because here's the problem with Ellie is this. Ellie was acted by a 32-year-old woman.
Yes.
playing a 13-year-old girl.
Who could do a really good little girl voice, but...
But she's acting like a woman.
Yes.
And that's the problem. That's the challenge.
It's like the problem when you have, like, adult actors voicing cartoon kids. In the end, you know, there's going to be some of that adult maturity seeping through for purposes of story.
And that's why those shows are so good.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to live action, it's harder. It's harder because you have to cast an actual kid.
Yeah.
But this is... I think Bella is the only, still to me, the only actress who could play Ellie. Because of just, like, when you look at Ellie on paper, it's like, what other actress are you going to get?
Yeah.
And you also have to think about what other actress is well-known enough to foot the to lead the to be the poster.
And also, I like the casting for Dina. It has the dynamic where, like, Dina's a 10 and Ellie is, like, a 5, where... But it's like, you know, oh, you know, Ellie comes off like a nerd in front of her, yeah. but Dina can, like, trade off in the wit, and I love their dynamic, and I wish there was more of that.
That's every couple, on average. Very few mm-hmm. couples are they're both smoking drop-dead hot and cool. On average, most couples are, you got one bombshell and the other one who is just super funny.
It worked for me. It was a great dynamic. I felt like their chemistry worked in a... Point. It's different than the game, but it works in the show.
But the game has that hint of still Ellie is the dork in the game. A little...
But I buy it more in the show. I buy that Ellie is a dork more in the show than in the games.
I think the only thing that they got wrong with this one is I'm like, damn, Ellie's a fucking Neanderthal in this show. That's it. She's just a fucking Neanderthal. I'm like, whatever. Other than that, let's just move on, I guess. I hope that more shows, whether adaptions or original IPs, just give your fucking story room to breathe.
Yes.
You have to get back to that. You really do.
Yeah, we don't just want the plot. We want a reason to care about plot.
Yeah.
An episode like the Bill episode. It'd have been nice if we actually met Bill earlier. Just outside of the game, as a TV show. If he was some recurring guest star.
Yeah.
And then we get the Bill episode. That would have been... Then I think they would have earned that. But it wasn't earned. It was just, oh, we're going to focus on some guy you've never met.
It's Nick Offerman. You'll love it.
And we dare you to skip this episode.
I think everyone should play the games if you can get a PS4 or PS5. And then give the shows a watch.
Get a PS5 and buy that new, what is it, Last of Us?
The bundle.
The bundle that they, yeah.
I swear, when I hear the bundles now for that, I think of South Park for the Nintendo Bundaroo. The PlayStation Bundaroo. I just think of that when I hear, because it's cash grab stupidity they're making fun of.
Yeah.
So now that The Last of Us is doing that, when already The Last of Us is on PS5, now you have to buy now you can get a bundle. It's like, oh, the Bundaroo.
They need to fill the time while they're working on Intergalactic, because God knows how long that game is going to take.
You know what? How about, here's an idea, a fun way to wrap this up. Yeah. What video game, if you could have a blank check, Travis, blank check.
Okay.
What video game would you want to see as a TV show? So not a movie. It has to be a TV show. And you get a blank check, however many seasons, doesn't fucking matter. This is blank check. Travis, what show do you, what game do you want as a TV show?
Can it be?
It can be anything you want.
Can it be something that's technically worked on, being worked on right now?
It can be what you want, okay. And it can be your way. You are literally, who is Dakota Johnson's dad?
Oh, Don.
Remember Johnson? When Don Johnson got caught in the late '80s with $88,000 worth of bearer bonds somewhere in Europe?
No.
Yeah, that was a storyline, by the way.
Okay.
You are him. You have. Okay. Bearer bonds up the ass.
Okay. So, yeah, I know Amazon is working on a Mass Effect TV show.
Oh, you're a big fan of that.
I love Mass Effect. Even the rotten ending of the trilogy. Haven't bothered with Andromeda. I'm a purist. The thing I'm worried about with the Mass Effect TV show is that they're going to make it the same way they make every big budget TV show nowadays, where it's like, oh, we're gonna make it like a 10-hour movie and we're gonna do the entire first game in one 10-hour movie session. I'm like, no. Mass Effect is Star Trek with an end of the world plot, which I say that, and some Star Trek fans would be like, oh, you mean Star Trek Discovery? I'm like, no. No, I mean the end of the world plot spans over 3 games and in my head 7 seasons. Yeah, so like, no, I would do Mass Effect as like a Planet of the Week show. That way you can get in all the side missions, all the character bonding missions. You could do all of that and take your time. And the reason why I wanted to do it like Star Trek is because, one, that's Mass Effect's primary influence. So you might as well ape that. You might as well make it like a more serious version of Star Trek Strange New Worlds if you need like a present day comp, because everyone in Hollywood loves their comps. You know what I actually know what I want with Mass Effect? I want Mass Effect to be the return of 90s sci-fi. You know, the era of Star Trek with Deep Space Nine and Voyager, the era of Babylon 5, the era of Stargate, which actually is more mid-2000s, but still applies. Planet of the Week procedural storytelling, but with longer-term arcs underneath. I want Mass Effect, a Mass Effect TV show, to be a return to that. So not only, yeah, Mass Effect would be my choice, but that would be how I would write it.
That'd be the formula. Like the
and I do, and the thing that worries me is like they're not gonna do it like that. I know that the new showrunner they picked, Doug Young, was a co-writer on Star Trek Beyond, but that was a movie, not a TV show. But he has written for television. He was a writer on Mindhunter, so that's something. I worry it's gonna be another kind of. We're gonna riff on Game of Thrones and space, and which is what they did with the Halo show, and it sucked. Which is what The Expanse was, and that was great, but The Expanse is its own animal. Mass Effect needs to be like a return to 90s sci-fi. It needs to be a return to 90s sci-fi television. You know what also attempted to be a return to 90s sci-fi, but wasn't that great? The Orville. But The Orville was just like, let's bring back the glossy lighting, the super basic camera angles, the carpet on the floor, didn't really bring, they tried in a couple instances, didn't really bring back that quality of hybrid procedural and serialized storytelling. And that's what I want out of a Mass Effect show. And I would like it to be produced in a manner where they could come out with a new season every year. I don't know how you would do that, but Star Trek produced 26 episodes a year before. Why can't we do that with just 10? Why can't we do that in a timely manner? Why can't these studios figure out a way to do that? And if they have to sacrifice some things, then sacrifice some things. The Expanse was produced at a low budget. That is a low budget show, but that show is fucking fantastic. And, you know, it doesn't look cheap. They just knew how to spend money in the right ways.
Wasn't the CW at one point also, too, just busting out stuff? And it was like, every year it came out, every year it came
out. Yes!
And they don't look cheap. They look like, yeah, that looks pretty good for a superhero show compared to the movies at the time that were, like, going on. Like, it is weird how the studios just can't wrap their heads around, you got to kind of spend a little money to make money here. And if you do it, you will make a ton of money because we want to watch shit.
Stop trying to ape the success of Game of Thrones. There's only one other show that has aped the success of Game of Thrones successfully, and it was called House of the Dragon.
And the next one will be the Hedge Knight.
The Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, and then the Duncan Egg show, or whatever.
Just stop touching Game of Thrones. Do your own thing.
Stop spending enormous amounts of money. Find ways to spend less money, but make the same quality product. You used to know how to do it, Hollywood. I remember. I remember when we had 2 Stargate shows at the same time, and they were doing space battles every other week, and they produced 20 episode seasons. I remember that time. Bring that back, please.
That should be our new never forget.
Never forget. That's my never forget.
That should be the country's new never forget. Never forget.
That's my personal never forget. Long form, long season sci-fi shows. Bring that back.
You fucks.
Yeah, you freaks.
All right. Nice. Mass Effect the right. Mass Effect the right way.
The right way. Watch that show come out and it's like something really good and something that I love, and this rant will be like highly outdated. I hope to, I guess I hope for that.
You hope to be wrong.
I hope that I watch it and go, okay, I don't have to write this myself. I guess I'll be nice about that. What about you? What is a game that, what is a series of games that you've played? Or just one game. Maybe it's one game and they never made a sequel that you think would make for a good television show.
I think, and you know what's funny? I thought about it at work. I was singing to the song that was played at the trailer at work. I sent you the video last night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I'm being serious. Hold on.
Okay.
Give me a rip. I really think it'd be cool to have, a Call of Duty TV show, but done to where it's not like the Navy SEAL and SWAT TV show we have right now.
I was going to say, they already made that show. It's called SEAL Team.
I know, it's stupid. But I think a Call of Duty show to show not just like, oh, because it's an IP everyone would love, it's to push the envelope of like this, no, we're going to make a gritty war show in a modern day setting where this is like watching the Pacific. It's tough. These guys have hard lives. They're doing some crazy shit that also they're losing their souls over.
They made that show. It's called Generation Kill.
That was a miniseries.
Well, you compared it to the Pacific.
I know. Well, no, here's the thing. In Generation Kill, we should never have been in there. That's the whole point of Generation Kill. We should never have been in the war. In the Pacific, it's like, fuck, these guys better be taken care of when they get home. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean about Call of Duty. I'd like a Call of Duty TV show. I'm okay with like a few seasons. Nothing have to be this long running.
Does it have to? Which games do you want it to be based on?
Obviously, the original trilogy.
The Modern Warfare, the OG Modern Warfare trilogy. Okay.
We gotta get Makarov. With a little, well, that and a little bit of the first Black Ops. A little bit. A little sprinkling it. You know what I mean?
You could probably get that show made in this administration.
Oh, of course. But the thing is, I want it to be.
The XF will champion that.
I want it to be more grounded. I don't want any cool one-liners. I don't want any cool badass moments. I want it to be like, you can believe these guys are doing these things not for the greater good of a country. Remember, they were doing it for the greater good of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That was the difference between just stupid written shit and the game. Yeah. In the OG trailer, Captain Price and his team were trying to protect the world.
That is the cool thing, that at the end of the game, it's like they're trying to, the original purpose of those games is to try to ape like how is modern warfare be done. But in the end, even though this was made by an American studio and you think there'd be like more rah-rah, you know, Marines is like the main characters or whatever, it's a bunch of like British SAS guys that you actually follow. And those became like Price and Soap and Ghost. Those became like the iconic characters that people remembered, which is why they use them in the remake.
And they're not American.
And they're not American. They're British citizens.
Who are protecting the world.
Price is British. Soap is Scottish. Because McTavish.
Yeah.
And then, I guess Ghost is, I don't know where Ghost is from. He had a, I don't know if he's like Welsh or something. I don't know.
But, you know what? Fuck it. He's Welsh.
Well, I don't know. Well, yeah. I don't know how they did Ghost. That's what I'm saying.
When you think about it, okay, you brought it up a great point. In the first two games, when you go between the Price's team and the American side, you play an American who no one remembers.
Mm-hmm.
In the first game, you die at a nuclear bomb.
Oh, yeah.
But no one gives a fuck about you, really. Yeah. In the second game, you're fighting alongside Keith David in the streets of America.
Mm-hmm.
No one cares.
And then, the American soldiers, like, no one gives a fuck about them. They're interchangeable.
It's about the three dudes from Liverpool.
It's about Soap and Price and Ghost. And, Roach is the character you play in the second game.
Third game, Roach. It's about the four guys. I'm saying, joking. It's about the four dudes from Liverpool.
Yeah.
I know. That's why I would like to kind of bring it more like how the OG trilogy was, where it's like, yeah, there's some cool, awesome set pieces happening. Price has some great one-liners, kind of. Mm-hmm. But it's just about we're saving the world from fucking evil, and we're willing to do it with our lives because remember what Price said about when they went to go after Shepard?
History is written by the victor. History is filled with liars. If he lives and we die, his truth becomes written, and ours is lost.
It's like where Price goes, like, megalomaniacal crazy. Yeah. He goes from being just a standard, dutiful British soldier to being, like, a little nuts.
That is awesome.
He gets as megalomaniacal as Shepard is. And Makarov, which I guess is fitting.
And you know what? If it's just three seasons for the three games, I'm okay with it. Because I just want
to... So that's really your choice, is to just adapt Modern Warfare OG trilogy
so
for TV?
So our wartime shows get back to how they were. These guys are doing the greater good at the loss of their souls.
Okay.
And I think we need that because... within a week and a half, I just rewatched Band of Brothers in the Pacific. Our shows don't do that anymore.
Haven't you been watching Band of Brothers repeatedly over the course of the past 3 weeks or something?
Yeah, and then I watched the Pacific. And I'm saying, I watch those at least almost like once a year and a half. Mm. Once every 18 months, I watch that. But it just was like, yeah, where are these shows? Like, even, again, it's a miniseries, so fine. Make Call of Duty a miniseries. I don't give a shit. Mm. But where is that where you're just... You're watching guys do something that says, yeah, no, there's something worse. It's not that I won't die. I might not ever have my soul back again. Mm-hmm. But at least the world can go to sleep safely. Because I'm taking down an evil. I'm helping to take down an evil.
Okay. All right.
And that's what I think it is. I want to do that because it's been in my head at work, just the trailer. Because the launch trailer for the OG Modern Warfare 2... is probably the greatest video game trailer of all time because it's Eminem's Cinderella Man playing against the stuff. And let me tell you, when that came out, that trailer, oh my God!
And it was just Modern Warfare 2. Doom, doom. Didn't even need the Call of Duty. It's just doom, Modern Warfare doom. 2.
You gotta rewatch that trailer, dude. If you watched it when I sent it to you, did you watch it?
I started watching it a little
bit. Isn't that fucking... Yeah. Think about that mindset when it came out in fucking 2009, 2008, that trailer. You're like this. Oh, fuck!
Yeah, it was... Doom, doom, shh. It's back when, like, every AAA studio had to have a shooter.
And when every AAA game was awesome.
Yeah. And now it's like shooters with the trend... And then Call of Duty and Halo kind of won that war.
And then they destroyed.
And then now the trend. And now the trend is open world.
I think the trend is survival horror open world, like the RPG. You know what the trend is? Getting back to item management.
Getting back. Everybody's trying to make like their own like Rockstar game.
Rockstar, Dark Soul, Demon Souls, Rockstar,
Assassin's Creed, and Far Cry, like. You know, because there's so many of them, you run into a lot of them that have, like, you know, that there's parts of the open world where nothing happens. What's the next trend going to be? Because it will not be live services. They tried to force that down on our throats, and we said, no, Fortnite and only Fortnite. Fuck everything else.
Surely you can't be serious. I am serious.
I am serious, and my name is Travis. That's our show, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a show. All right. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening, everybody. I did not mean for this to go on as long as it did, but we had to get this off our chest.
We've been gone for over a month. This was actually fun, and you know what? Yeah. I stand by my Call of Duty pick.
Fair enough.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Bye, everyone.